At this time, we take a break from the pressing issues in the news cycle and celebrate the season with some storytelling. And we're listening to music from Sparky and Rhonda Rucker now. They're a husband and wife duo, folk and blues musicians and storytellers based in Tennessee. Their performances are filled with original and traditional songs and tales. Welcome to Living on Earth.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
Now, as I understand it, both of you have preachers in your family. How much did life revolve around the church?
Well, I'll tell you, in my family, it was everything. My grandfather, Bishop John Lindsay Rucker of the Church of God, Sanctified Church. And I always like to say it that way because, you know, just by the very name of it, it implies that all other churches are not sanctified. You know, and that's, you know that old saying, everybody thinks they're the only ones going to be in heaven, you know.
How about you, Rhonda?
Yeah, my uncle was a preacher. He was a preacher in the Methodist Church in, the United Methodist Church, unsanctified.
Yeah.
But they move people around in the Methodist Church, and so the preachers, they kind of do musical chairs every so often. And so he would be moved in various places out in the state of Kentucky. And so come holiday season, that's where we would go. We'd go to their house, and everybody would gather there. But it was always a new town that we were going to, a new house and whatnot. But it was great gathering. That's one of my favorite things about the holidays, is getting to be around the family members.
Yeah, especially, you know, gathering together with the family. And,
yeah.
And I was fortunate to get to know my grandmother there at my grandmother's table. Gosh, she was a wonderful cook. She could cook the beaten biscuits. Now, I know a lot of people don't know about beaten biscuits, but those, there was a special way that she'd mix them up, and then they'd put these fork holes in them, and she would put them in a big old mixing bowl and put a linen cloth over the top of them, and they would stay fresh for a week. And the reason I know that, because she'd cook them on Sunday, and I'd come over there the next Saturday, and before I'd say anything else, I'd come running in, and she'd just point to the kitchen. They're in there. And I'd go in and grab one of those biscuits out of that bowl, bite into it. It was just like it just come out of the oven. Oh, and of course, like I said, there was a big family. There were six boys, six girls in that family. And every one of those women had their own specialty that they would cook. My Aunt Babe, she made chow-chow. Now, I don't know if northern folk know about chow-chow, but some people, I guess they call it relish. But we call it chow-chow, but we actually call it cha-cha. And she would make this stuff, and I mean, it was hot, you know, it had peppers and cabbage in it and whatnot. And, you know, she died with that recipe. Nobody ever learned how to make Aunt Babe's cha-cha. But you know what? Everybody had jars of it after she died, and I'm talking about it, it was like gold, you know. You'd be at a meal, and somebody would go in and come out with a jar, and they'd say, I've got one of the Aunt Babe's jars of cha-cha. And it was after she had died, and there we were, sitting there eating that cha-cha. Oh, it was good.
It was her legacy.
Her legacy, yeah. And you know, it's what you put on pinto beans and turnip greens. Oh, it was good.
Rhonda, what was it like for you at the holidays when it came to food?
Well, I mean, we usually had turkey and dressing and that kind of thing on holidays, and somebody usually did a ham as well. But I tell you what excited me more than anything was the dessert, and it usually included chocolate, which I still love. But we would go to my aunt's house. She always bought these, like, ice cream things that were in the shape of a Christmas tree or a Santa Claus or
Aunt
something
Elsie.
Like that. Aunt Elsie, yeah. And, boy, we just didn't get that at home. You know, my mom wouldn't do that. But the big thing was being around all my cousins and visiting and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. You're all sitting around this huge, huge table and everybody telling stories. So it was a wonderful time. And the church, oh, man, there's just wonderful people in the church. In fact, I'm old enough that there was always somebody down on the front row, you know, in the Amen corner, that people would whisper and say, you know, that's Sister Lucy. You know, Sister Lucy used to be a slave. And it's amazing to me to realize that in my lifetime, I met people who had been slaves.
So, Sparky, you're not only a performer, but you're a historian of sorts and a teller of traditional African-American tales. And I understand that some of your stories do go back to slave times. Now, our theme for this holiday special is hope. What was there in the way of hope for slaves on a plantation in the South?
Well, you know, Christmas, for one thing, it meant you would have a couple of days off. And it was time for you to get that one present from the master. And usually it was just another pair of shoes so that you wouldn't have trouble working out there in the fields. Or if you're one of the younger kids, you'd get a new, you know, the kids usually ran barefoot, but they'd get this one sort of a long shirt that they would wear that would come down to about their knees. But it also meant that they would get finally one good meal. The master would maybe let the slaves have one of his suckling pigs. And there was a story that they used to tell. You know, every culture has tricksters. The people who come from the British Isles, they tell stories about Jack, the Jack tales, Jack and the Beanstalk, Jack the Giant Killer. The Native Americans, they would tell stories about Old Man Coyote. He was the trickster. You know, the trickster is there not to be something mean to you, but the trickster is there to give you another way. You know, it's like coming to a fork in the road and you're trying to decide which way to go, and the trickster is there to make you take the road you wouldn't take. And that's to keep your life from becoming so stale. And so they would tell stories to the kids about Br'er Rabbit because, you know, Br'er Rabbit was the rabbit that he was the animal that all the other animals, even though they were supposed to be his friends, they were all meat eaters. Br'er Rabbit was a vegetarian. And, of course, Br'er Rabbit was also on the menu for everybody else. So he was too small to be able to fight Br'er Bear and Br'er Fox and Br'er Wolf. So he had to use his brains instead of his brawn to overcome. But when the slaves at night, the adults, they wouldn't tell the stories of Br'er Rabbit to each other, but they'd tell stories about a slave who could not be controlled, who was a trickster. And his name was High John the Conqueror. And one of my favorite stories is telling about John and the master's pigs. Because John, you know, even today, everybody is always talking about bacon, everything, and, you know, all the hamburger places always talking about loading bacon on the things and whatnot. Well, with that suckling pig, you know, just coming around once a year, John kept thinking, well, I ought to be able to have some suckling pig more than once a year. And he said, notice, you know, the master, there's just lots of them running around squealing and stinking up the place. Seemed like he wouldn't miss if I just took one pig. And so, you know, John kept thinking about that. And finally one night, you know, the devil got a hold to him or something. And he said, I got to go down and get me one of them pigs. So he snuck in, climbed over the fence and picked up one of them. And he run back down to the cabin and took that thing in and cut him open and dressed him up there and put him up all in and put him in the pot, big old iron pot, you know, them kind of that you could hang over the fireplace there. And he just let that thing cook down, just cooking on down, oh, till the meat was just falling off the bone and it just smelled so good. And he had him some corn pone left over from the night before, and he'd take that, you know, and he'd sop it in the gravy, and that was just lay back and belching, you know. this was a good meal, you know. And, well, next day, you know, he just couldn't get the taste of that pig out of his mouth. And he just kept thinking about it. And he kept thinking, well, you know, seemed like maybe I could get me one more pig, you know. And master, well, you know, there's so many of them. So that night he got him another pig. Well, that happened 6-7 days. And finally, you know, even the master started noticing, seemed like I had more pigs around here than this. And, you know, John was his overseer. So he called John, have you noticed that some of the pigs been missing? Well, you know, Master, you know, I heard some barking down in the canebrake, and I believe there's a family of foxes down there, and I believe old Br'er Fox been in there and got one of them pigs, you know. Well, John, we better try to keep an eye on them, you know. So John comes down, whew, man, I got away from that. Maybe I better go back to eating possum again. But, you know, once you done had the taste of pig, possum just won't do. Mm-mm. You know, and so after a couple of days eating possum, he said, you know, maybe the master forgot about him. Maybe I can just go in there and get me another one of them squealers. So he said, sure enough, went down there 2 or 3 nights, got him a pig, cooked it up, and the master started noticing again. He said, well, you know, I believe that fox is just getting my, I'm going to have to go down there and check on this myself. So that night, Master went down, hid up in the bushes, and had his eye on the pig pen there. And sure enough, he saw something kind of heading toward the pig pen there. And he said, well, you know, that looks too big to be a fox. I believe that's John. And sure enough, John climbed over the fence, got the heading back down to the cabin. And Master thought, well, that couldn't have been John, because John's a faithful servant. He went back up to the big house and was sitting there trying to think on it. And the more he thought about it, the more he said, you know, I believe that was John. Well, he said, I'm going to give him enough rope to hang himself, you know. So he waited right good till he thought probably the pig was cooking pretty good. Then he went down to the cabin, and sure enough, John's in there just getting ready. Oh, it's smelling up the room good. And he goes, man, I can't wait to eat me some of this pig. About that time, you heard a knock on the door. Who's that? You know, acting all mannish and whatnot. And he goes, it's me, John. Master, open up. What do you want, Master? Well, let me in, John. I got to talk to you about it. No, my Master, you know, it wouldn't do for you to come into a lowly cabin, you know. Why don't you go on back up to the veranda? I'll be up there to see you in a little bit. John, let me in. Well, no, Master, now, you know, just a lowly cabin. You big shot. You ain't supposed to come. John, let me in. Well, what could he do? He went to the door and opened up the door. Master came in, you know, and John kept thinking, man, that pig smelling that. But the master didn't say anything about it. He just kind of sat down at the little table there and started discussing the futures, you know, cotton futures and whatnot, and what he planned to do next year, and talking about the South 40, it's time to get that planted and whatnot. And John thought, well, maybe I'm going to get away with it. About that time, the master said, John, what's that smell so good? Oh, it's just old possum that I caught, you know. It's a scrawny old thing. It didn't mean much, but I thought I'd cook him up. And then, well, John, that sure smells good. I'd love myself some of that possum. Oh, no, Master, it wouldn't do. You know, all your friends be talking about you eating possum like a slave. No, Master, you don't want to be eating them. John, I believe I would do want to try some. No, Master, that John, I want some of that possum. Well, what could John do? He got up from the table and walked over to the pot there and got him reached up over it there on the shelf, got down this old wooden bowl and got a spoon. And just as he was about to reach to open up the lid of the pot, he looked over at Master. He said, Master, now, when I put this thing in this pot, it was a possum. Now, don't you be blaming me if it comes out a pig. And the master tried his best not to laugh, but he couldn't help himself. And he thought, well, you know, John, maybe I'll let you have yourself just every now and then. You gave me such a good laugh. I'm going to let you just every now and then have a pig. And sure enough, to his word, every now and then he'd give John a suckling pig.
So John was a trickster, and keeping with our theme of hope, His tricks must have given hope to slaves who knew this story, but did he really exist? I mean, how often were slaves actually permitted to steal the animals they were supposed to be tending?
Well, the thing is, on the big plantations, you know, the stealing the chicken, stealing something out of the tater patch or the watermelon patch or whatnot, because they had to survive. You know, I'm going to use an improbable word here, a benevolent master. He would let them have a truck patch. I don't know if you folks use that expression, but a truck patch is like a small garden that you'd have for yourself. And if you were lucky enough to have somebody that would let you have a little truck patch, you ate pretty good. But other than that, you just had to eat the leftovers. In fact, there's lots of stories that I've heard that the kids, especially when they would sell the mothers and fathers away to another plantation, there was usually an older slave woman who had charge of the kids, and that they would give them the slops, basically, the things like the guts, you know, which, you know, chitlins are the snouts or the pigtails, and they would kind of cook all that together in just a sort of a stew kind of thing, and they would actually pour it out into a trough, and those kids would eat at a trough like animals. Mm. Mm. So these kind of stories, whether John really existed or not, gave them hope. They never gave up hope. They always thought that someday that they would be free. You can enslave a person's body, but you can't enslave their mind. And as long as they had hope, they were free in their minds. And that these songs and the stories reflect that. They never gave up hope. They never gave up hope.
A lot of that body of work, the traditional songs, a lot of them were protest songs. I grew up singing a song called I Got Shoes. It was a slave song. And Sparky was talking about how even the basic necessities for a slave, they were hard to get. Shoes, shirts, piglets. But in this song, I Got Shoes, they talk about I got a robe, I got a crown, I got a harp, luxuries. When I get to heaven, not only am I going to have the basic necessities, but I'm also going to have these luxuries. And furthermore,
yeah, right.
The master, you know, at church talking about God and love, and then comes home and presides over the decidedly un-Christian institution, you know, enslaving their fellow man.
And that's why that verse, everybody talked about heaven.
Yeah, everybody talking about heaven ain't going there. There they are singing it. I guess the masters didn't even get it, you know, what they were singing. But we could do a little bit of that.
A snippet.
A little snippet of that song. I got shoes, you got shoes,
all of God's children got shoes. When I get to heaven, gonna put on my shoes and gonna walk all over God's heaven, 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 heaven. Everybody's talking about heaven ain't going there. Heaven, 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 gonna walk all over God's heaven.
I got rope.
You got a rope, all of God's children got a rope. When I get to heaven, gonna put on my robe and gonna shout all over God's heaven, 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 heaven. Everybody's talking about heaven ain't going there. Heaven, 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 gonna shout all over God's heaven.
I got wings.
You got wings, all of God's children got wings. When I get to heaven, gonna put on my wings and gonna fly all over God's heaven, 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 heaven. Everybody's talking about heaven ain't going there. Heaven, 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 gonna fly all over God's heaven.
I got a crown, you got a crown, all God's children got a crown.
So that song, I mean, kind of means hope. You know, I've lived long enough now, I can see that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it does bend toward justice.
You know, I've got my guitar here, and I'd like to sing a song here. It's an old slave song, but it was one that was sung at the Christmas tide.
Go tell it on the mountain, over the hill, everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ is born. When I was a seeker, I sought both night and day. I asked the Lord to help me. He showed me how to pray. Go tell it on the mountain, over the hills, everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ is born. When I was a sinner, I prayed both night and day. I asked the Lord to help me. He showed me the way. Uh-huh.
thanks to Sparky and Rhonda Rucker, who celebrate their holidays in Maryville, Tennessee. Coming up, from tales of the Deep South to tales from the people of the Middle East and beyond. That's just ahead on Living on Earth. Stay tuned.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from United Technologies, a provider to the aerospace and building systems industries worldwide. UTC Building and Industrial Systems provides building technologies and supplies container refrigeration systems that transport and preserve food and medicine, with brands such as Otis, Carrier, Chubb, Edwards, and Kidde. This is PRI, Public Radio International.